RadioInfluence.com.
This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
And welcome in, everybody, to the Landry Football Podcast. I want to start off by hoping and praying for all of you out there, particularly our neighbors in Texas and in all parts where there are dealing with the horrific combination of Arctic cold weather and no power. It's just been one thing after the other. It really is humbling, isn't it? Growing up in this country and thinking that we are immune to some of the things that we see on TV that are in other countries. What a year it's been. Past couple of years it's really been, when you think about how we have been humbled to the point that, you know what, anything can happen to anybody, even in the greatest country in the world. Been thinking about that a lot. Because I live in the deep South, the cold weather is not all that prevalent. I sometimes lose sight of it. When it is cold, the first thing I think of is the folks that don't have a place to go, the homeless. I think of animals. And yet, you know, in colder climates, I think they maybe are better prepared for those situations. But they have to deal with that all the time. So it's on my mind, and need to get to some football talk, because that's what we're here to do. That's what you want. We need to talk about. But it does bother me. It's been heavy on my mind the past few days. So hope and pray that things get better and they can find some solutions for everyone there. I want to remind everybody, check out, if you haven't done so, LandryFootball.com. The scroll down at the bottom will tell you, it's like having access to your own football scouting department, football front office, coaching and scouting department, for less than a magazine subscription. Give you an idea of what we've got going on. I have wrapped up, put to bed recruiting, conference by conference. Now I'm working, and should have it done by today, if not tomorrow, an evaluation of each college's roster by conference to tell you how the roster stack up going into spring practice, understanding that there'll be changes, but it gives you a good idea of who has what and where. And I think that's interesting. We've got the SEC up. I did that last night and got that done for you. So be sure to check that out. It's grading the rosters in the SEC heading into spring practice. We'll give you on each of the rosters a little summation, give you some notes in there, but we'll rank them and put them in tiers. We'll tell you kind of how they ranked in 17, 18, 19, 20, and 21. What was their record overall and their record in the SEC? Then how many 5-stars did they sign? Because I know I went ahead and transcribed the grades the way we grade them in ball, versus how the websites grade them and the fans like in the media consumes it. How many 5-stars are on your roster? How many 4-stars are on the roster? And then in parentheses, I have how many 5-stars and 4-stars are coming in this recruiting class. So the reason I do this and combine it is to just wrapped up the recruiting class. That's who's coming in. And then now we know by now, because obviously who is announced for declared for the draft, we know who's, and maybe to this point, we think a lot of the transferring is done, but there'll be more, but you gotta, at some point, without a true calendar, in college, you gotta grab it and take hold of it. We'll always update it. And that's what's great about the website, we feel, is that it gives you the updates all along with the transfer portal. So we got that going on, and certainly we are going to focus largely on free agency in the draft the rest of the way. I want to talk a lot, but check out LandryFootball.com, and you can get those details. We already got some initial free agent lists. We're going to grade them, have a free agent board, off-season strategy for all the teams, draft boards, evaluation of draft prospects, he tried to say four times. So we've got a lot of things in the notebooks every day. We'll get all the information to you as to what's going on in all the pro side with the player movement and on the college side with transfer movement and beyond. By the way, let's start off there with a definite, complete understanding that if you are dealing with information that's going on, don't believe the nonsense, because that's what it is. It's the news around the world of football, particularly the NFL, is so inaccurate about what teams' draft boards look like and this and that. Folks, nobody is going to tell you what their draft board looks like. So if somebody is telling a reporter, and that reporter is reporting it, that this team has this player ranked here, number one, they're not telling you, they're putting it out there for a reason. They want you to think that. And coming from experience, it's just not reality. So keep that in mind, is that these quote-unquote sources say, and it's, of course, never on the record. Of course not, because it would unveil that it's not as in tune as you think it is. And a lot of it is speculation and made up, and, you know, but a lot of it is somebody that they actually talk to. It's usually somebody that's an underling that's trying to climb their way up the ladder and thinking that their name, if they get known and other people throw out, say nice things about said employee at a team. Boy, this guy does a great job, dude. That's the other thing. How does somebody on the outside that doesn't know the inner workings of the organization know who's really good and who's really not all that good or not all that involved in the process? Well, they don't. But what they're trying to do is they're trying to help someone. It's a, you know, you help somebody, I scratch my back, you scratch your, type of thing. Look, it's, you get your friends to move higher and higher up the ladder, then you can get more information from them. People tend to say nice things about a person's competence in direct correlation to how much they like them and how close a friend they are. And just the opposite. Don't like somebody, then they're not very good. And if you learn, I know I learned in scouting a long time ago, a player would rub me the wrong way, a coach would rub me the wrong way, a scout would rub me the wrong way, and it would have an effect. Now, certainly if a person's personality is not easy to work with, that's a problem. But a lot of times it clouds the view of how you evaluate that player, coach, scout, what have you. So don't believe the talk this time of year. It is very, very inaccurate. And not only inaccurate, it is done with a purpose to be inaccurate, to throw people off course. I tell people all the time, I never spoke to folks about what we were doing, but I can remember that the year that I drafted Eddie George, anybody that was speculating on who we like would have a strong belief that Lawrence Phillips and Tim Biakabutuka were the top running backs on our board that year, which wasn't even close. But in today's world, you can't just keep quiet because the speculation is rampant. So if there's going to be speculation, teams make it a point to have people speculate about you incorrectly to throw you off course, and that gets disseminated. Not you, but to throw the reporter off course because they know they're going to put it out there. I always say, if somebody tells me something on their board, I know it's not true, or they want me to repeat it. Well, I'm not going to repeat it. I'm not going to help them in that regard to spread a lie there. Salary cap is going to be between 180 to 188 million this year. That's what we're speculating and what we're hearing. And we think, and again, how do we know? This is not a rumor situation. The way it works is they're forensic accountants that actually take all the salaries and say, well, why does it take so long? Well, because there's a lot of players that have to be counted up, assessed, and that includes not just salaries, but incentives in the deal, bonuses in the deal that all have to be calculated. So that's the latest. I'm going to take you through, got a question on football analytics. Also, we certainly are taking your questions as we're doing this show live on Twitch TV. You can listen to this podcast through the great folks at Radio Influence. If you want to watch us live do it, you can certainly do that on Twitch TV. Go to LandryFootball.com and click on Follow Chris on Twitch, and we'll be right there for it. We will take, for those of you that are listening live, you can go into the chat room and send us a question there. We're going to talk. Do have a question regarding football analytics, so I'll get into that. We'll talk a little bit about trades, a little bit about how you set up a draft board. We'll do a lot of that and take it in segments because each and every situation is very, very detailed. But want to also mention a couple of other things, one on the college side administratively. The dead period in college football, well, in college sports, but college football is what I'm focusing on here, is dead period has been extended to May 31st. No on-campus visits, no visiting in person. Who's it affect most? It affects the less highly budgeted programs, the teams that don't have as many resources. It's a difficult process. And it's important to understand, remember that the class that was just signed in 2021, the classes are done so far in advance, getting to know these prospects, that you have to make sure that you are on them so early that what ends up happening is, you know, in this case, you don't have enough time to get to know them. So the 2021 class, you had a good feel for some of those players. You got to see them in person, not recently, not this past year, but sometime when they were juniors. Now you're dealing with players that you really are not getting to know at all. And if you don't get to know them through May, now we're going to see, this is going to make it starting in June, if we can get some clearance in June, we're going to have a lot of makeup time in the summer and the fall, and we'll see what adjustments can be made to develop that. The importance of getting to know the players and their families personally, what it's done, it's opened up the whole Zoom recruiting and that angle. And look, if you're going to have a pandemic and you're going to have being locked in and not going out and seeing people face to face, boy, in the modern era, it's a lot easier to be able to communicate with FaceTiming and all those modern technologies. So you're going to have to adjust. It's not the end of the world, but what it is, I'm trying to make a point out of it, it could create more mistakes in the 2022 recruiting class than even the 2021. Just keep that in mind. And certainly a little bit in 2023. You're not seeing them as much in person. You're not evaluating them in camp. They're not evaluating you. So those things are in mind. The other thing I want to keep that in mind, the other thing I wanted to get to you in the NFL before I get into some questions and some of the things I want to discuss today, there's a lot of talk yesterday. The news around the NFL was, wow, Kevin Colbert of the Steelers made it pretty clear that Ben Roethlisberger is here. We love him, but you know, we don't know what the future holds. Let me explain a little bit about what's going on and then why they would say it that way. And it's all part of the modern day world that we live in. So Ben Roethlisberger, as in a lot of cases with these contracts, are backloaded to where he's got a balloon number this year. There's zero chance. There's no chance that Big Ben can stay on this current deal. Well, he knows that. He's already said that he's willing to restructure. That's not an issue. But the message was sent publicly yesterday to make people who may not be aware, maybe the fan base, maybe certain members of the media that are not as astute on what goes on, that, hey, look, we love them, but certainly we have to get a deal that makes sense. Well, that does a couple things. It's good PR for your side because, and it's good PR for Ben to have said, yeah, I'm willing to take a pay cut. So if they can't get a deal done, if they can't restructure that deal down to the satisfaction of both sides, well, then they've got a, well, here's the reason why. We're laying it out in front of you. Because it's not, we don't believe in them, not, we can't have it at this number. Well, everyone knows that, but it's a good way to kind of remind everybody who may be a little bit blindsided down the road, don't be blindsided because this is a possibility. My expectation, obviously, is the deal is going to be reworked to where it is manageable from a cap standpoint. He's got a huge $40 million plus figure on it. But that's the what happens in these deals. It's also why you have to restructure. But here's the thing about restructuring. When you restructure, what you are doing is you're taking money that's due in salary and you're pushing it back. Well, you got to be careful with that. And there is a possibility depending upon how much Big Ben wants. So in other words, he's not going to get $40 million in a salary this year that is due. But he's going to want a nice chunk in a roster bonus, a signing bonus, not a roster, a signing bonus. In this case, signing bonus. And that can be prorated. But the more you prorate it down is like putting it on the credit card, right? Remember that theory? Well, Big Ben, you know, 2, 3, 4 years from now, you don't want to be paying, you know, $2, 3, $4 million of dead money to Ben Roethlisberger, who has since maybe retired, let's say. So it's not as easy as you, well, redo the deal. That's just what a fan says. And I get it. I get it. Fans don't care about money. They like this because they love watching football. But in the business of pro football, it's important to understand that in order to keep a guy like it is possible if they can't get that deal down at a reasonable number that he could be gone. Now, if they need a free agent, then someone can try to sign him for what it is they feel he's worth. But the real key is to have yourself in a situation to where you can have him on a one-year deal, maybe a two-year deal, a one-year with an option that gives you the freedom to say, here's what we could pay market value for 1 year, but we're not going to mortgage the future. We're going to pay what we can and be real prudent with making sure that we're not paying interest down the road, because that's essentially what kicking the can down the road is. Everybody says, oh, that's great how they managed to get these guys in. Well, they're not really – it's not that difficult. It's not difficult to restructure a bunch of contracts. I hear people say this all the time. The Saints have probably been the ones that have redone deals more than any. It's not difficult. It's not like, oh boy, Mickey Loomis is a genius. It's easy as pie to redo these deals. You just push it to the back end. Just put it on the credit card. Get another credit card. Max that out. Get another one. Max it. You know, the lines of credit for these teams are not an issue in this case. That's how they do it. But the bills comes due and you're going to have to pay more in interest. In this case, it's more dead money interest down the road. So dead money, again, to remind you, is money allocated to a player on your roster that's not there anymore. But because you push the money back. So but there's a reason why they said it, because there is a possibility that Big Ben may not be there. Do I think he will be? Yes. But that's going to depend upon them getting a deal that would make some sense. Rich Coach says, back when you were in Cleveland and Tennessee, what players did you try to trade for? And have you ever had trades null and void for players failing their physical? I've had a couple that just physicals. You know, there was something that wasn't, well, you don't know if a guy didn't have an injury or sat out or what have you. There are a couple of things that were you wouldn't classify as an injury, but a medical issue that that voided the deal. Yeah. Well, and I wanted it to, but, and that's, it needed to be voided. Would I try to trade for, what players did you try and trade for? What players did you try to trade for? Well, that's a long list. I couldn't even begin to go down that road. There are a lot of guys that we, you know, tried to trade for. There's a lot of trade talk that goes on, and a lot of things that I tried to trade to get more picks than anything else than players. Probably, but you know, in terms of players, guys, that's just way too many. I'm trying to maybe give you one that might have been a little bit more sexy, because if I tell you about some of them, you might say, who? Try to trade for a backup quarterback in Green Bay that I like, Mark Brunell, for a second round pick. We ended up not getting that done, and we drafted Steve McNair, but that was one that was maybe a little bit more notable. But yeah, no, there are a lot of guys you try to reach out and try to talk about. Speaking of trades, so always talking about situations like in Philadelphia with Carson Wentz. Yeah. Didn't you hear the insider guys? That's what they call their guys, the insider gurus, that claimed that deal was going to happen this week. And that was like 2 weeks ago. And of course it hasn't. Well, how does it get there? What's going wrong? What's hold up? There was never any, it was going to be done in 2 weeks. It's done when you can get a deal done. You know, it's just it's one of those things that you have to understand. Why is the insider putting that out? Well, it's his job. Why is somebody giving him that information? Well, the reason why, you know, 2 weeks ago, you know, an Adam Schefter type guy puts it out there, he's going to be, expect the deal to be done this week. Everybody run, oh, it's done this week. Let me check it. Is it happened today? Is it happened today? Chris, is it happened today? That is the Eagles putting the information out to the insiders. It's sending a message. So it sends a message to the suitors. The Bears, the Colts, anyone else. Looks like a deal is going to be done this week. So if you know, well, we're not close to doing a deal, that means somebody else might be. Well, that is, you know, a way to throw stuff out there using the media to maybe spur some movement by somebody. Well, you know what? We better do it. Maybe the owner said, yeah, you know, maybe we need to even think we're to, you know, increase the offer. We ought to do this. That's the reason why it's done, folks. You don't know, you know, you try to get a deal done, you try to work on something, and it comes together. It sometimes it goes at a snail's pace. I mean, it may take 3 weeks to go from, you know, an inch, and then you get the last mile done in like 20 minutes, you know, the negotiation part. And then you have to do the paperwork, but that's, yeah. It's look, always understand the deadlines. The deadlines in moving a player, the league year, when a roster bonus is due, all those things. Look, could a deal get done at any point? Yeah. It's more likely to come late. And when you hear, the more stuff you hear about who's interested, how many teams are interested, and who's willing to offer this, they're not. Nobody is telling you what they're going to offer Philly. Philly is putting out false information to be consumed by other people that are potential suitors. That's how it's done. Look, the media is there to put information out there. I kind of serve as an analyst. Yeah, there's a lot of, for those that are members of Landry Football, you get a lot of information about what's going on. Yes. But it is with an analytical viewpoint, what's happening, and more definitive. The rumor stuff needs to be consumed accordingly with less than a grain of salt because of the reasons that I mentioned. It is done strategically by teams. And, you know, I don't think a lot of times the media quite understands that they're pawns in putting out information. Sometimes maybe they do, but quote unquote, even the ones that have it. And the other thing that you need to know is a lot of it goes through agents too. A lot of teams, in this case, the Eagles are putting it out on a trade situation. But if it's a negotiation of a free agent, they're getting all that information from agents. Why? Why do you think an agent is saying, man, they're offering X for such and such a player? Well, it's out there. Other people see it. Wow, did you see that? Joe Blow. Did you see what they offered him? You see what's being reported? You throw out figures. It's phony figures. It's never even, not even close to being accurate. But it's given out there to the media for them to put out there because it may help to rise the competitive value of a player. Remember, and this is, we're going to get into more of this on free agency talk. Free agency, the draft, like any form of business, it's supply and demand. How much you get as a player in free agency is not the most important thing, is not how good you are. The most important thing is what's the market value, and what's the market value? You know the answer to that. You learn this in introduction to business. It's supply and demand. So if you're a top shelf player, an A-level player, I'm just throwing that out. I'm not using my grading scale here because I know all the time you don't follow the numbers in the grading scale. But if you're an A-shelf player, but you've got a number of other players in the market in free agency or the draft, your value goes down because the supply, while the demand may be at a certain area, the supply is pretty good. You're a really same level player. Let's say you're a B level player, but you have less guys that are of your quality there. You're going to get more money. Why? Supply and demand. Quarterbacks get drafted higher. Pass rushers get drafted higher. Quarterbacks, pass rushers get paid more. You know the importance of the position, but you also know the direct correlation to what is the toughest thing to find. Big guys that can run are tough. Average quarterbacks are tough to find, much less good ones, even less great ones. So the chance that a guy can be any one of those increases his value because there's not a lot of them. You can look, and you'll see this when my draft board comes out. You can see the number of players at other positions. Look, you got only one quarterback that plays at a time. Look at how many receivers play on the field at the same time. Running backs are plentiful. You know, great corners that stand out are not plentiful. But you've got a lot of corners that got big ones. You got small ones, quick ones. You got a lot of guys that you can fit in the mix. Great left tackles. Harder to find on offense. Interior offensive linemen are more plentiful. So the value is different. So understand that that those are the things that matter. And so when you see things thrown out about what a guy's getting offered, understand that it's very, very often inaccurate. The trade conversations go, if I'm doing a deal with Philadelphia, I know the representative, in this case, probably be Howie Roseman, will know. And, you know, unless he tells his owner, I tell my owner, we're the only two that know. Or, you know, if there's someone else that's between the owner and, you know, there may be somebody else involved, but in the organization, there's no one else knows. So if we have a discussion and I'm just said team and I have my thoughts of what I would be interested in giving up for Carson Wentz, you know, let's just say, or any player, and just say it's you know, said player at any position, and I'm thinking we probably could do a three. You know, and what's to stop that guy from floating out? Because it's done all the time that, yeah, so-and-so team, rumors are they're offering a two and a three. Well, that's not true. That's not even close to three. I mean, that is beyond inaccurate and false. But you're not going to get it from me, but maybe they get a little bit more out of the other guy. Or maybe instead of getting my three, that's maybe at 25 in a round, he may get somebody that's picking fifth in the third, and they may get a better deal. Because remember, you don't look at draft picks as first round, second round, third round. You look at the overall number. Again, the first pick in the first round and the 32nd pick in the first round are both first round picks. They're completely different. So understand, you know, the value of that. But a lot of that stuff, just keep that in mind. A couple of other things here. Rock says, do you recall the Chiefs' horrible reputation pre-Schottenheimer Peterson? This is such an underrated turnaround by those two. I actually got offered a job by the Chiefs. This was before we moved from Houston, New Orleans to Nashville. And I interviewed there. And Carl was the hiring of Schottenheimer was good. Marty was really the guy, though. Carl was more Hollywood than Carl was not. Was not the heavy hitter that people think. He's more of the facilitator. And they did a pretty good job. Terry Bradway, Chuck Cook were really good in their personnel department. Worked well with Marty. When I ended up not taking that job, they ended up hiring John Schneider, which is a great pick for them. John Schneider is now the who's a Green Bay, Wisconsin native and worked under Ron Wolf, is now the works for Pete Carroll out at Seattle. He's the GM at Seattle. So they had good people. They ended up getting better off with John and me. Marty was the real force behind that. Carl was again, very Hollywood. He was very, wasn't a great personnel guy, but Carl loved him some Carl, but I thought as a whole, they did a good job. There's no question about it. And they struggled. They struggled for a long time. No question about it. But nothing like, you know, what's going on right now. Obviously they've had great success in the past. If you look at, after Hank Stram, the stretch, you know, the whole story about the Chiefs, ironically, with Patrick Mahomes now is it just goes to show you we'll never get one. You know, we'll never get one. They struggled with quarterbacks from Lynn Dawson until, quite frankly, Joe Montana in the latter years. And he did some good things in the playoff with them. I mean, they really struggled with the DeBergs and the Fullers and the Bill Kennys and the even Todd Blackledge, who's taken very high. And, you know, they were one of the teams that drafted in that 83 draft, loaded draft with quarterbacks. But yeah, no, there's no question that, that Marty did a really good job there. And Carl certainly did his role. Jeff says, Chris, if you're the GM of the Panthers, do you send three first round picks and your star running back to the Texans for Watson? First of all, let's think about it for a second. Let's discuss that. Let's have a little meeting in the draft room right here. In the war room. So one of your picks are going to be I believe they're picking eighth, Carolina. That's going to be part of the deal. So follow me here, because it is technically true, three first round picks. But what it really is, if you think about it, it's two first round picks and a running back. Yes, I would trade Christian McCaffrey as part of a deal. Great player. Makes a lot of money. And I'm not saying you can go down the street and get a Christian McCaffrey, but you can be good with less commitment financially. And so, yes, I would trade Christian McCaffrey as part of the deal. But before you make your decision, understand that it would be Christian McCaffrey and two first-round picks. Because at the eighth pick, or perhaps in the second round if they like somebody deeper in the draft, the eighth pick, they might take a quarterback. Do you take one of the quarterbacks in this draft with the eighth pick, or would you take Deshaun Watson with the eighth pick? I think that's an easy decision. So in essence, you're taking your eighth pick, and that's part of the Deshaun Watson deal. So essentially, you're giving up two first-round picks in the future. Costly? No doubt, because you're still dealing with a first-round pick next year and the year after. There's some other options you can go to get some more picks, maybe get back in the first round in the future. But let me just say this. The Panthers need a quarterback, will likely take a quarterback. And if they take a Mac Jones, a Trey Lance, what do they have? Potentially something good, or a great quarterback that's in the elite category. I think you'd have to consider it. I think I would. I think there's probably a couple of other things I would try to do to sweeten that on my end. But I would consider it. But again, I think you have to look at it as two first-round picks. With one of them, okay, we'd have to take a quarterback with one of them. We don't have to do that now. So we don't have to take a quarterback at eight. And I'm not saying that they definitely will. They may not think one of them is valuable. But if they don't, then they don't have a quarterback that they feel like they can compete with. You eliminate that. You not only get Deshaun Watson, you get a young Deshaun Watson who is elite and is young and under contract. So it's like you talk about just tailor-made for you. That's not something that I would rule out. But I think you need to think about it in that way, and teams will. They will. It's what you have to look for. So it's not a justifying, but if you're going to have to use one of those picks on a quarterback, when one of them, you don't have to do that now. You got Deshaun Watson. It's two first-round picks. Still costly. And again, you don't know where those picks are going to be in 2022, 2023. You have to trade it for it if that's what you do, if you're Houston with the idea that it's a mid-round pick. Now, I think that it's still going to be tough to do because Houston is going to want a quarterback. They would want prefer to have a Tua or a Sam Darnold in the deal because they can get a quarterback, whereas I don't think that they're going to be, the Bridgewater situation would not be something that would be interesting. Rich says, what quarterbacks did you consider? Had you drafted Steve McNair, and was there some resistance from scouts and coaches? Yeah, there was a lot of resistance on taking Steve McNair. In fact, we didn't. It was Jeff Fisher didn't want Steve McNair. Jerry Rome, the quarterback coach, didn't want Steve McNair. Only one of the scouts really wanted Steve McNair for us. Yeah, there was a lot of resistance. Yeah, there was. You know, when we took Steve, I knew that he was not going to be a great player, but he would be good. And I knew he would be tough. I knew he'd be a leader, and I knew he would do some good things for us. But, yeah, there was definitely some resistance. With quarterbacks, well, there's what other quarterbacks would I was consider taking? There was at different times, there's a lot of guys that, when you have a quarterback, the quarterback that you look at has to have more going for it than the quarterback that you currently have. So, and there were some that, was considered taking. but not as many as you might think when you have one. There's no question. And let's see here. Will the Bucks defense performance trigger a copycat effect where teams pay more attention to that side of the line and potential value? Seems that defense hasn't been emphasized. No, Rock, the defense has been emphasized. It's just, the Bucks haven't emphasized it any more than anybody else. I mean, look at the Panthers. We just talked about the Panthers. Every player they took last year was on defense. The position that's overdrafted outside of quarterback the most is big guys on the defensive line. I mean, the receivers and the running backs are, unless you're great, they're devalued to some degree. I mean, you can get them later. The emphasis on defense has always been there. It is there. What I think people confuse is people think that people are not focusing on building a defense as much as they used to, and that's why they're not as good. No, the reason why defenses are not as good is because of the rules. The rules favor the offenses. So people take advantage of the rules as they are. If you're going to call things in favor of the offense, we're going to make sure that we've got enough explosiveness ourselves. So I think the focus is a lot on offense, but that makes the defense even more important because you've got, a crazy locomotive running down the track offense. You've got to be able to come up with stops or else it's a tennis match. And I think people emphasize defense and will continue to emphasize defense. It's just that how you define defenses are differently and what you're looking for. For example, you get safeties that are more cover guys, that are more corner converted guys, as opposed to the safeties looking like linebackers. Why? Because you're not defending the run as much. You want to have guys that can cover in space. Now, ideally, you want linebackers that can cover now, that can line up like, Tampa's got linebackers, but, that can cover. But look at all the guys. Devin White's great, but look at all the Deion Jones. Look at all those guys that have come out. Isaiah Simmons. And people criticize that pick because it was, it's too high. It's right. Twice taken because, and whether it's going to pan out or not for the Cardinals, it's just because whether his ability to cover and match up against these athletic tight ends. So everybody's doing everything and have been doing everything to match up defensively with the offenses. But they're different type guys. You can find a lot of serviceable receivers. You can find a lot of guys that can be serviceable in the secondary. You can find linebackers that can cover. They may not be as strong against the run. But pass rushers, impact guys up front, that is emphasized more than anything in the draft outside of quarterbacks if you don't have one. And if you got a quarterback, you're drafting defense and defense and defense. You look at most of the picks, what most people do. Players that slip position-wise for positional reasons, it's more of the skill position guys. Offensive linemen slip. Receivers will slip. Running backs will slip. Tight ends will slip. You don't see defensive linemen slip. If they slip, there's a reason. There are problems or something there. Great corners. So, no, I think the emphasis has been there. I think the emphasis has been there. Anything. Rock also, going back to the Super Bowl, Chiefs fan says the Chiefs gave up on the run too soon. What was Reed thinking? Well, early on, he was trying to get some big plays out of the offense. But once they got down in the game, then running the football, they were taken out of the run. So that decision was made for him pretty early. But early on, I think that they probably could have run more. I don't think it would have made a difference in the game. I think that in retrospect, that Bucks team figured it out. A couple of things, and I'm going to have to table football analytics to probably next week when we talk here, but I want to mention something about, the draft boards, and we're going to talk a lot about draft boards and setup. So a lot of this talk about, this team doesn't need a quarterback. All right. So let's just take, for example, the Chiefs. the Bills. I mean, you know, the teams that have quarterbacks that are set. They're not going to evaluate the quarterbacks in this draft. Oh, they might draft a young running back. They're not going to be spending a lot of time looking at, you know, for example, well, who's going to really stutter Trevor Lawrence? Why are all those people going to Trevor Lawrence's workout? He's not going to be there, this and that and the other. Don't understand. You're not evaluating just the guys that you might be able to draft. So why would the Kansas City Chiefs or the Buffalo Bills, it's just using it, why would they evaluate Trevor Lawrence? Not in a position to draft him. They already got their quarterback, so they really, if they did somehow have the number one pick, they trade it to somebody that desperately wanted him because they got their quarterback. And they got a guy that probably is as good as Trevor will be or better. Then they're not going to evaluate him. Like hell they won't. Don't understand. There are two things. First of all, in any player, you don't ever know what the future holds. You don't never know. I mean, let me give you an example. Dwayne Haskins. Now, that's a little different. Drafted a little later and all that. He's out on the market. By the way, we talked about Ben Roethlisberger. He's with the Steelers, if you've lost track. You don't ever know who's, for whatever reason, is going to, I mean, did anybody think he was going to be the quarterback of the future? It's the guy that that time they were the Redskins, the Washington football team wanted to move up. You don't know what's going to happen to a player. Deshaun Watson, who would think that Deshaun Watson would even be up for a trade possibility? Now, don't know that he is. Carson Wentz. Who would have thought the Eagles would be trying to trade him? You never know what's going to happen. Yes, once a guy's played in the league, you've got the pro film. But if you don't do your due diligence and know everything about your players coming out, you don't know as much about their background and their character and the key people that you can go and find out about. You don't have that relationship with a coach at Clemson that you can go and find out what makes this guy tick, or Carson Wentz, and what's the issue and how did you deal with it? Those things are invaluable. You never know what's going to happen. You never know who's going to be released. You never know who's going to be available via trade, who's going to be available as a free agent. Okay. But here's the other thing, that even if none of those things are a possibility, in order to set up the draft board correctly, and this is what's important, you get this a lot. Well, they will put these goofy little draft boards up and they will rank them and based on need and all that. You don't evaluate and set up your draft board, which, by the way, the draft boards are not even close. They're not even halfway. They're not even a quarter of the way set up yet. Okay. So this, you know, even if it is true about this and that about a draft board, it's not going to hold up because it's, again, the meeting's not gotten to that point yet. But you have to draft every player regardless of position, regardless of need. You can't make a player less of a player or more of a player based on need. If you do, you're going to ruin the integrity of your draft board. And what's important is to evaluate players correctly, affix them on your draft board correctly, and then you factor in need. Because if you've got, and you'll hear me explain this over and over again, it's if you've got players, multiple players in the same grade tier, then by definition, you've graded them regardless of need, and they both are in the same tier, let's say, then you take the one at position of need or the one that maybe has, that may be tougher to fill later in the draft, you get the best value there for you. But you're not basing your evaluation on the value. You can't do that. You have to set your draft board up as every player is somebody that you would consider taking. And why? And you have to grade them, or else the integrity of your board, you build your whole board around certain guys. So if you don't evaluate Trevor Lawrence, how the hell are you going to really compare him up to Mac Jones or Trey Lance or Kyle Trask or anyone else? When you go through that exercise and that process, you may determine, you know what? I'm in the quarterback shopping business. I like this quarterback, but you know what? He's going to cost us a first-round pick. I think we can get a second round, we can get this guy in the early second round, and I don't think that in the critical factors for us that the difference is all that great. Oh, we still think the other guy is a little better, but is it worth the extra money when we can mitigate the risk? You don't know that if you don't do the work on all the players. You can't sit there and say he's the best quarterback on the board. Well, if he didn't thoroughly evaluate the top guy that you have no chance of getting and you may never have a chance to get. If you don't adequately evaluate him properly, then you have no comparative measure against the guy that you would draft. It's all important. The other thing is you may not ever have a chance to get the guy, but at some point you're going to play against him. And knowing everything that you need to know about that player is really important. So keep that in mind. Grade the player regardless of need. Do not make need a factor in how you grade a player. If you choose to make need a factor in where you take a player, that's on you. If you take a player out of a different tier, a lower tier over an upper tier, in my opinion, that's a mistake. But it's usually because they've misevaluated the guy. They've let the need factor, boy, I don't know, he's better than what we got. And, you know, all of a sudden you got this guy and that guy. And then all of a sudden you got a bunch of little average players and you're playing up against guys at another position that you're suddenly weaker at because now, even though you were great at linebacker, now you've lost two of them to free agency. And, you know, you wish you'd have had that guy that last year you passed up because he wasn't the biggest need, but he was the better player. And now he's a need, but you can't go get him. It's too late. Now you got the other player that is still in a position of need. You didn't upgrade that position and you failed to upgrade this one. You always have to be thinking ahead. Where are you going to allocate your money on your roster? Where are you going to go? And where are you going to go into the future? And you have to be thinking in terms of long term on your team. Always that. And if you don't, then you're going to struggle. And so I think that's really important to understand. Let's see if we can get a couple more questions in. What does Kadarius Toney remind you of when you watch him play? Who do you see him at the next level? He is the typical guy that can be a slash type player. You know, he's got a little bit of the Percy Harvin type stuff in him, not just because of the familiarity with the, you know, with similarities of where he went to school, but I think he's got some of those slash qualities, can move in the slot, do a multitude of things. So I think he's got really good value there. Remind me, folks, because I have a question and I took a lot of your questions here. We had an email question and remind me next week. I want to get into football analytics and talk a little bit about how some of that's played out, the importance of it, what is really relevant in football and what's hooey and some of the things that's taken place. We're all going to talk a little bit about front office structure too and how that's changed over the years and how it's different than what my philosophical approach is in today. But Kate, we appreciate you joining us. Remember to check out LandryFootball.com. Take advantage of the scouting season discount, where you're going to absolutely love it. You can get all the detailed film room analysis, roster analysis, free agent analysis, draft analysis, college roster analysis, you name it, recruiting analysis. We got it all for you. So check it out at LandryFootball.com today. Make sure that you sign up and watch us on Twitch TV live and make sure that you check out all the great programming that's involved with Radio Influence. We appreciate you joining us. Join us again next Thursday for Landry Football Podcast. Join me tomorrow with Neil McCready on the SEC Football and Beyond show as well. So we've got more information, good stuff for you there as well. Have a great day. Be safe out there. If you're in the cold weather, be safe and certainly stay in touch with the proper authorities. If you're in trouble, you're probably not listening to this show. But if there's something you can do to reach out to help a neighbor, check on them, please do so in this very frigid temperature. I understand in some parts of the country, there's maybe even more colder weather coming this weekend. So please be safe out there and check on your neighbors. God bless. Be safe. Talk to you tomorrow on SEC Football and Beyond.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
This is an MMA report with Jason Floyd and Daniel Galvan Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
With you having that karate background, how can he beat Usman?
Yeah, I think that the two people that are possibilities of dethroning Usman is Colby Covington and Stephen Thompson, like you mentioned. And I will say that Stephen Thompson is such a tricky equation to try and solve. If you look back on when Tyron Woodley was scheduled to fight Stephen Thompson, he had to bring in and fly in all decorated karate specialists to kind of emulate that style. And if you've never dealt with the footwork or the stance or the kicks and the angles of a karate fighter, you know, it's a very difficult thing to deal with. And a lot of people think, well, you just go out there and you wrestle. Well, that's very difficult to do when in karate you have excellent footwork and you're able to, you know, minimize getting controlled in the cage. So like with Stephen Thompson being so in and out with his movement, throwing so many lead leg kicks, that's the big thing. Lead leg kicks in karate versus rear leg kicks in other styles such as Muay Thai and kickboxing and so forth. You're fighting a fighter that has two jabs, essentially. They have their jab with their hand, and they have their lead foot that can ultimately be a jab, whether it's a lead leg round kick or a side kick to keep you at bay. And I think getting inside that distance is so much more difficult than people realize until they face somebody like that. You saw how Tyron Woodley, when he had success in the fights against Stephen Thompson, it was because he had to blitz forward. Now, a guy that stays on the outside and is very patient, like a Vicente Luque, you saw how, you know, Stephen Thompson picked him apart. That, you know, like you have to mix it up and you have to really crowd a karate fighter. So I will say that Wonder Boy, despite being a little older in the weight class, I think that just the style alone can cause a lot of problems for a lot of people and be a very competitive fight for Kamaru Usman.
Yeah, I'm with you that to me it is Covington or it is Stephen Thompson.
The MMA Report with Jason Floyd and Daniel Galvan can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.